my pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight. Evie comes to us from Helm, California. She came a good distance tonight, and she just celebrated 22 years of continuous sobriety. So please help me welcome Evie.
Hi, my name is Evie. I'm an alcoholic. He said I could stand or sit at my age. It probably won't take me a whole long time to start sitting. Gosh, this is a wonderful room. It really is. I'm the kind of person that clearly doesn't need a mic. So you'll be sure to hear me whether or not you want to. I'm glad you're all here. Congratulations on your six-month-ship. That's a real milestone. You know, it really is 180 days without a drink. If you have a problem with me being here, Diane is probably the one you want to see after the meeting. She volunteered me for this a whole lot. And I have a sponsor who tells me I can't say no. So, you know, it's not my fault. It's Diane. I don't dwell a whole lot on drinking. My purpose isn't to bore the hell out of anybody. This is not a church. I don't want to bore you. My drinking, what I can remember of it, was virtually boring because I sat in my bathroom for 21 years pretty much and drank. My back bathroom is quite large, and I didn't want to see anybody. So I hold up in there. Every 3 days I went out for more booze, and I would come back and lock myself in the bathroom and just drink for the next 3 days. And I think that's obsessive about me. I got lonely in there, so I set up a TV and a VCR in there, you know, lots of entertainment. I didn't have a phone in there because I didn't want you bothering me. And that's pretty much the way it is. You know, we alluded to the fact that I had a birthday a few weeks ago, and there's one part of my drinking that is all too vivid. And each year before I celebrate, God blesses me with another year of sobriety. Instead of polishing my brass, thinking, oh, look at the chips, you know. I remember the one day that I will never forget. You know, we don't want to forget the past. We don't want to dwell on it, because if we keep looking back, pretty soon we're headed that way. But it's good for me to remember something that was very humbling for me. I had grand mal seizures, which, not a problem. I don't remember them. My family remembers them with horror. But I had DTs. And DTs are kind of like childbirth. If you've been through it, you don't have to explain it. If you haven't, no explanation will do it. But for you ladies who haven't experienced this, it's much, much worse than childbirth. Mine were manifested, some people see snakes or spiders crawling out of walls. Mine were manifested in fire. My stomach would start burning, and then there would be a flame that pretty soon, it was all around my body. I was in flames in my head, and they were very, very real. And the only thing that would put the flames out was more booze. Well, the first time I had the DTs, I could not coordinate because I was on fire. I couldn't open a bottle. And I thought, I was at a remedy for things. You know how we're really smart, we figure things like that. That's never going to happen again. So I put a bottle of vodka under a bathroom sink and put foil over it and stuck a long straw in it. And that was my solution. I could crawl on my hands and knees and put my head under a bathroom sink. And that worked beautifully. I cured the DTs, you know. So I try to remember that afternoon of crawling on my hands and knees and putting my head under a bathroom sink. people look at me today and say, oh gosh, you don't look like an alcoholic. Give me a beer in 30 minutes, folks. I'll show you what an alcoholic looks like, you know. I had the grand mal seizures and the DTs and the blackouts and the hallucinations. And I 2 weeks before, I did get into, did get some help. I was going to fry chicken. Why I decided to fry chicken, I didn't know. I didn't know if the sun was coming up or going down. I didn't know east from west, but that hasn't changed, folks. I'm still directionally retarded. I had to have a GPS to get here, and I've been to Vicente. I had to have a GPS today. I've been to Vicente a lot of times. But now, if you dial for time, she tells you, good morning, the time is. Well, the old hag didn't do it in those days. She just says the time is 6:30, so I had a 50-50 shot, and I took a chance. But it was morning that I was going to fry chicken. And I apparently went into a blackout because I don't remember this. And the next thing, now this is after my grand mal seizures, and the next thing I knew, there was mess on the floor, and it was part of the grease. And I could feel it, you know, it was sticky. And I looked down, and I saw some fingernails down there. I don't have artificial fingernails. Burnt my hand so badly that my fingernails had fallen off, four of them on this hand. And I looked and I could see bones. I don't know. I wasn't thinking, of course, I was in a blackout, but it kind of cooked my hand, you know. It was just awful. And so I wrapped my hand up because I didn't want to get in trouble. And 4 days later, a friend of mine finally forced me to take this, all this gauze off. And the skin I had left here was turning green, gangrene had set in, and so she forced me to go to the doctor, and the doctor wouldn't even touch it. He gave me a shot of Demerol, the only drug I have ever taken in my life, and I fell in love with Demerol. I hadn't felt that good in 100 years. I thought, man, if I just knew where they sold this stuff, I'd be a steady customer. Anyway, I got to a plastic surgeon that specializes in surgery to the hand, and he wouldn't even touch the hand. He said, this is so badly infected, we have to give you, we have to get the infection out before we can treat it. But he sent me home with a whole bunch of antibiotics and 50, I don't know anything about drugs, Percocet or Vicodin or whatever it was. Anyway, there were 50 in there. I think there were RBC. And I got home, and it said, don't mix with alcohol. Piss me off. I put them in a cover. Nobody told me that if you mix alcohol, it doesn't make you feel that much better. I didn't know. So I put them up there. That bottle was never opened, by the way. 2 weeks later, and the doctor kept scratching his head. He said, I don't know how you are managing with this kind of pain. And I thought, oh. You drank a quart and a half of vodka every day, too. You wouldn't eat any of these pain pills, you know. Of course, you know, I didn't discuss it with him. But then 2 weeks after that injury, I went into a coma, which ultimately saved my life. My husband took me to St. Agnes. And in those days, they had a treatment center. Catching up to me, folks. They had a treatment center, and I was in a coma, and I was just there, and 4 days later, I woke up with all these little good things, what do they call them, headlocks or something like that, in my arms, and they were pulling everything off. They said, oh, you finally came too, and I said, I thought I had just taken a little nap, and so this person walked in and said, you know, dear, you may have an alcohol problem. And I said, oh, I probably did, but I said, I haven't had a drink in 4 days, so I'm good to go. And she said, you haven't had a drink in 4 days because you've been in a coma for 4 days. Oh, details, you know? So I stayed in there another night. They wanted to make sure they'd given me something so I wouldn't seize again. And, of course, the doctor was watching the hand very carefully. And so the next the next morning, this other person came in, and something I'll never, ever forget. This person said, did you ever plan not to drink? And I thought, of all the stupid questions I've ever heard, that one has to be the stupidest. Of course, you know, every day of my last 21 years, I planned not to drink. It never worked, but I planned on it. That was my first thought every morning. I'm not going to drink today. Of course, that lasted about 10 minutes. But this person said, you know, that's alcoholic thinking. A normie never plans not to drink. I didn't know that. I thought I was thinking quite normally. So they said, I thought about that for a long time, but I thought, well, I'll still go home. So somebody came in and said, you can go down the hall and join your group. This group. I said, I'm going home. He said, well, we'd like for you to stay a little bit. And your husband would like for you to stay, too. So I thought I would humor them, and I hadn't had anything to eat. I'm sure I had some nourishment, too, whatever. But I hadn't had anything to eat, and this was the fifth day, and they said, you can go join your group for breakfast. There were 20 people in there. They were round tables like this, and the smell just about. My stomach is like, oh. And I turned around, and I walked down this hall. I just walked in. I didn't know this is where the important people were. You know, you're supposed to make an appointment or knock on the door. I just walked in there, and I saw this little guy. And I said, this will never do. And he said, what seems to be the problem? And I don't know if you've ever been to a treatment center, but I started making demands. I thought, well, I'll figure this place out right away, you know. And I said, I want a private room. And I want a TV in my room. And I want a telephone in my room. And I want meals served in my room. He said, is there anything else? And I said, yeah. I said, do you know some of those people down the hall, they get on drugs? He said, really? And I don't know why he said that. I didn't know who was on drugs and who wasn't. I just thought I'd throw it out for shock effect. Didn't seem to shock him at all. And he said, anything else? And I said, yes. Because I could tell I wasn't impressing him a bunch. I said, and furthermore, some of them have tattoos. He said, you know, this nice little old lady that had been killing herself in her bathroom 21 days, I became Judge Jim all of a sudden. And he said, you know what, lady? He said, you're going to be very lucky if those 20 people in there accept you. Now, that hadn't occurred to me. You know, I could stand in judgment of these 20 people, but it hadn't occurred to me. And, you know, I stayed there and hated every minute of it. I hated every minute of those 31 days. I just knew that, and that little guy that I gave such a bad time to that first day, he became my counselor. Each one was assigned 5 people. Well, I don't know how much money the poor guy made at the time, but he sure earned every penny of it that month. I look back, and I think, poor guy. But I have made some amends to him, but, I called him some nasty names, some real nasty names. But I didn't know he'd been in the Navy 20 years, so he'd probably heard all these wonderful words that I would have. You know, and I didn't like him because he pulled my covers, and I didn't like humility, and he gave me my first big dose of it. We were in group one day, just the 5 of us and him, and I knew it was an AA degree that it took to get there. I had asked somebody, and I said, you know, you think you're so damn smart. I said, I studied 5 foreign languages in school. I could not budge this little SOB. He said, oh, yeah? He said, which one kept you sober? That I kept my important little tail between my legs, and I got out of there, and of course, you know, I just got madder and madder. And jumping way, way far ahead, he wasn't at my birthday a couple of weeks ago. We've become pretty good friends, folks. He's just so cute. And he told me about 10 years later, we were having yet another discussion. And he said something about his SO being Frank, and I said, oh, you're gay? And he said, yeah. He said, I said, well, why didn't you tell me when I was intrigued? And he said, yeah, that's all you needed was more fuel, you know. But not this Monday, but the Monday before, he called me. It was 2 days after I celebrated my birthday. He said, hey, are you ready for a cup of coffee? And I said, I would love it. And he came out, and he spent the whole afternoon. We sat out on my front porch and drank coffee. And, you know, I live 35 miles from him, and I call him, or I send him a card every year, thanking him for saving my life. You know, he really did, because if it hadn't been for him, and the only reason I stayed up there, because you're not in bondage, is that they told me it was a disease of insanity. And I thought, I hated him so bad because he had embarrassed me. I laid up there and planned his murder every night. I wasn't sure how I was going to do it, because I knew the windows at St. Agnes were much too strong for me, so the little sucker out the window. And we were on the third floor. I thought, he'd probably bounce anyway. But I really planned his murder. And I thought, you know, they don't give you the death penalty if you're insane, and they tell me I'm insane. And my roommate, who was a registered nurse, bless her heart, she said, I don't think that's the type of insanity they're talking about, keeping you from murder. But we've become very good friends. And my husband just loves men, too. You know, they spent many hours wringing their hands over, what are we going to do with her? She's a flight risk, you know. So they became pretty good friends. Early sobriety. I planned every single second I was up there at St. Agnes that I was going to get home and drink. Now it's Saturday. I got out. The next morning, I was told I had to go to a meeting every day. So the next morning, I got up, and I was going to go to the breakfast meeting on Ashland and 99 there in Fresno. That's the one I had picked out. I had no intention of going to that meeting because every meeting I go to was 35 miles away from me, except my home group, which is 8. But I have no intention of going to the meeting. And I just told my family, you know, I'm out of here. I'm going to the meeting. I'll see you in a couple hours. Well, I was just going to drive straight to a liquor store. And my car was a little bit brighter than I, because it drove me right to that meeting. And that was a miracle, because I never know where I'm going. Christopher Columbus and I have something very important in common. He's the only man in history, till me, that did not know where he was going when he left, didn't know where he was when he got there, and didn't know where he had been when he got home. That's me, drunk or sober. And I didn't know how to get to this meeting, and I got there. And that was God's intervention, because I didn't have any intention of going to a meeting that day. You know, I've done what I've been told. I went to a meeting every day. My sponsor wanted me to get into service. I volunteered. My counselor told me he wanted me to stay 2 years at St. Agnes and volunteer at their facility. And I said, I don't ever want to see you again. He said, well, then go out there. That little tiny little town. There's 57 of us in the town. And my husband and I are the only two that speak English in the town. So, you know, that isn't very conducive for a whole lot of fellowship and program. I understand the language. He doesn't. But there's just no meeting in that tiny little place. So I decided, well, you know, I better do what I'm told. And I went there. And then I wanted a social model experience. I went to volunteer at camp for a couple of years. And can you believe it? They said, I called them. I said, I'd like to volunteer there. They said, well, come in for an interview. Another poignant moment of humility. I thought, me? 2 years sober? And you want me for an interview and you're not even going to pay me? I didn't say a word. I went in for the interview. And I fell in love with the place, and I stayed there for 5 years. And then I went into prisons. And at 6 years, though, I got into a little trouble. They say your brand of AA will change at 6 year interval. If you've not done any service, that'll kick up your program. If you're doing too much, you know, you have to moderate. And I was doing a little bit too much, and I got into some emotional trouble. And I talked to, for years, I couldn't admit this, but my doctor wanted me to see a psychiatrist. He called him in there, I just saw him one time, and he wanted, you know, wanted to know what was going on. He said, well, I go to prisons, I'm volunteering at CAP, I sponsor eight women, and on and on and on and on. He said, do you think you could reverse stress? And I had never heard that term. So he taught me how to reverse stress. And by the time I left there, I had called the women I sponsor. I had called CAP. I had resigned from there. I called the prison coordinator and cut down two prisons. And he came back in. He said, do you think you can do it all? I said, it's done. I said, if nothing else, I've learned to take suggestions in this program. He said, well, good for you. He said, where do I sign up? I said, well, you drink for 22 years until you're blind, and then come and see me. And we chuckled, and he said, you have a happy life. And since then, you know, it's been pretty good. And, you know, I love to talk about, we were talking about Scotty AIDS before the meeting. This guy, I saw him at a convention, oh, so many years ago, probably 17 now. My sponsor and I had gone into the prison convention, and he's like the 7-foot-tall, skinny Texan, and he has a straw, and he comes out, you just fall in love with him, but he comes out with this little pad, and he says, I have a couple jokes here, you guys have to humor me, and this one, he said, drunk came to after the earthquake, and said, he walked outside and said, damn, how am I going to pay for all of this? You know, we all relate, right? And so he got in the car after he got through, and I couldn't wait to get home to tell my husband. Now, he got into Al-Anon the day I got into AA. They shoved him out of St. Agnes, and they said, you take care of yourself, we'll take care of her. So every year we kind of celebrate our birthdays, you know, not together in the same room because I, you know, it's like mixing oil and water. But, but he had these 5 years of Al-Anon, and I got home and he was watching some sports. They're never ending. And I told him a joke. And he said, well, didn't that guy know that you're not responsible for an act of God? And I thought, oh, God, you know, I just never get it. They say men are from Mars, women are from Venus. I think normies are from Jupiter. They just don't. They just don't breathe the same air we do, you know. And one time I was having drinking dreams, and I talked to my sponsor. She said, that's pretty common. She said, that's God's way of telling you if you ever get complacent that yeah, you're the real thing, because normies never dream of alcohol. Oh. So we came home for dinner that night, and I told my husband, I asked him, do you ever dream of alcohol? And he just shook his head like he usually does and gives me this poor little newcomer look. You know, he still does that. Why would I dream about alcohol? You go crazy trying to deal with a normie. I just feed him and put him in front of the TV and watch his dirty clothes once a week. And, you know, oh, by the way, something's working somewhere. I met him when I was 6 and he was 8. We knew each other for 12 years, and we've been married, next week it'll be 46 years. So, Mr. Romance, I just love it. We were having, I was already sober, and we were having dinner for our 25th wedding anniversary. And he said, you know, this is Van's cousin, or her mom said, he's crazy. He said, you know, I don't know if this marriage is going to work out. But he said, I'll give you another 25 years and then we'll talk about it. That's as romantic as Van gets, folks. So I have another 4 years before we have this discussion again. So, and you know, by then, hell, we'll probably both be too old to remember the discussion we had on our 23rd. So I'm not too concerned, you know, anybody younger would kill him. And anybody older would kill him too, for different reasons. Not a problem. But, you know, I always, up in St. Agnes, I always saw this big sign, expect a miracle. My first miracle was going a whole 90 minutes without a drink of alcohol, because that was a regular thing, just to keep the whips and the jingles away. Until I thought, wow, you know, if miracles never get any bigger, I'm good with that. And I was sober 7 years, and this little gal, I didn't want to even go there, but she begged me, and her husband was working in, and he couldn't get away too. She was expecting, he couldn't get away for the birthing classes. And so I told her I would go to him with her, and she said, I want you there just to hold my hand when the baby's born. I said, oh, I don't think so. She said, oh, please, please, please. And I said, okay. I can close my eyes and turn the other way. And she said, okay, I just want you to hold my hand. She said, Kurt will be there by much on my hand. So it was, in December of 93. And the plan was he lived 15 miles from work, and we lived 15 miles in a different direction from her. The plan was she would call. It was about 8:30 on a Friday night. She was going to call. No, it was about 6:30. She was going to call. She called him. She called us. My husband was going to take me as far as their house, and he was going to come home. So we all met there and got her to the hospital. It was in Madera. And we spent the next 4 hours just kind of fiddling around. They finally said, go home. You know, this isn't going to happen for another 2 or 3 days. Well, we stopped back by her house, and he said, do you want me to take you home? And I said, only if you guys want to be alone, because Butch isn't expecting you tonight anyway, Butch being my husband. He's never outgrown that name, folks. A 270-pound man with his name, Butch. He's so cute. It gets him, doesn't it? Anyway, he said, no, we don't want to be alone. And so we got into their house. They had a tiny little house. It was so cute. And I said, Jen, honey, why don't you go to the restroom real quick, and we'll make you comfortable for the night. This was already after midnight, and gosh, it was already after 1:30, and she said, okay. And I heard this scream. She walked out of that bathroom and dropped like a rock on the kitchen floor. And the night before, I had been reading, there was that old show, Emergency 911, with William Shatner. I don't know if anybody ever saw it or even knows about it, but I never watched it either. There was something about kids bleeding and screaming that there was an entertainment for me. So when that came on, I'd always be reading. But God's intervention and God's miracle, what didn't happen the night that baby was born, but it happened the night before, when that was the only segment I ever watched of that program. This woman came out of the bathroom, and she dropped, and her husband called 911, and she talked him through the birth, and the baby stopped breathing, and the chest caved in, and the baby started turning blue. And at 1:50, Saturday morning, December 18th, there she was on the kitchen floor, and I screamed at her husband. I said, call 911, get a flashlight, get the hell out of this house, and start waving that flashlight around. I had just taken a first aid course. Nothing about childbirthing, folks. I felt like, what's her name, Hattie from Gone with the Wind. Don't know nothing about birthing no babies. My son's 44 years old. Those are the good old days. They knocked you out 2 hours later. You woke up and they told you what she had. You know, I wasn't present when my son was born. And here's this baby on this tiny little kitchen floor coming at me. I said, Kurt, you want to trade places? And he said, he ran out of the house with flashlight before I could catch him. Well, the baby's head came out, and she said, what is it? What is it? And I said, I don't know, but its name is Evie. And she said, anything. And it's a lot of disrespect as far as I'm concerned. They call baby Johnny, but, you know, now that he's 15 and he's a football player, it's probably better that they're not still calling him Evie. You know, I forgave her for that a long time ago. But that baby was in my arms, and it looked like the television show, just a rerun. And I knew what to do. I was too busy to thank God at that moment. But he had given me a gift the night before that I thought I would never, ever have to use in my life. And there I was, doing exactly what I saw, because God taught me the night before. And the baby started crying. And here comes Yehu, that were 2 blocks away, the paramedics and fire department. They come in, oh, And the father, Kurt, young kid, they're early 20s, he comes in, he says, what happened? I said, what the hell you think happened? Take this baby. he couldn't even get close. And here's this one fire paramedic on one side and the other on the other side. They're on their knees. And one of them hands me this thing that looks like a great knife. It's curved. It just looks awful. He said, here, you have the honors. I said, what are you talking about? So you get to cut the cord. I said, let's put this baby castrated right now. I said, you do it. I said, I am. My hands, they were just shaking, and the baby was slimy, and, you know, take the baby, I'm not going to cut the cord. And so they scooped the mother up and the baby up, and they're out the door, and they're in the ambulance. And here's the young father said, do you mind if I call my parents and her parents? I said, you can call Ethiopia. These legs aren't standing anywhere. So I just went as far back as I could against the wall, and I just stood there in a daze. And the paramedic, you know how we are as alcoholics, we watch the clock all the time when we count things, at least I do. And the paramedic, and I don't know why, I looked at the clock, I don't even remember looking at the clock, but the paramedic said, do you remember what time exactly the baby was born? I said, oh yeah, 1:51. He said, well, that'll be on his birth certificate. And it happened to me, 1:51. I don't know, you know, I was just, everything was happening so fast. But we get to the hospital, and I guess I'm more or less it's a small hospital, I'm more or less a celebrity in admissions. Oh, there she is. And down the hall, oh, there's the midwife. And down the hall, I'm thinking, oh, shut up. I'm just not in the mood. Besides, I didn't get out of her house till about 2:10. And here we are. He's becoming alcoholic. So is Jen. And I said, isn't this shit, Kurt? He said, what do you mean? I said, here we are. We can both use a drink. And it's after 2:00, and we're in California. I said, that's got to be God. I swear to God. Anyway, we get in the hospital. We finally get in her room, and there's doctors everywhere, nurses everywhere. I'm thinking, where the hell were they 30 minutes ago? You know, no, they weren't around. And I said, oh, Jen, baby shower just wasn't good enough for you, was it? And everybody started cracking up. I still wasn't in a real good humor. I was, you know, I was shaking a little bit. But the fact that God had me watch that segment the night before, and I knew what to do, and I did it, and I was sober, and I was the person that got to see Johnny, and later on they asked me to be his godmother, and what a miracle. And that was 7 years sober, and I didn't think of it. Miracle could get any bigger, and I went on with life, and I just thought, wow, God has blessed me, you know, with this watching the birth of a baby, and getting to hold him, and knowing him, and him calling me auntie, and 2 years before that, I was 5 years sober, and my husband was in Tule Lake. You don't know where it is. I do know enough to know that it's right almost at the Oregon border. If you stand at the edge of town, you can throw a stone into Oregon. That's how far up north it was. So I went to join him for a couple of weeks, and it's a tiny little town, not as small as mine, but, you know, a couple thousand people. And I met a lady the first day there. Wonderful lady. I adored her. She had 20 years sober. She was this tiny little brassy mouth thing. She had my brand of AA, and she loved God more than she loved anything, and she loved AA. And we got to be good friends really fast. And I didn't see her after that. We kept in touch. There was no email in those days, no cell phones. But we would call each other occasionally, but we'd write. And it was only a couple months after that trip, she called me up and told me she had a very, very serious illness. And I said, oh, God, Penny, I'm so sorry. She said, no, listen here. She said, I'm in a win-win situation. She said, if I beat this disease, I win. And if I don't, I get to see God a whole lot sooner than I planned, and I win, too. And knowing Peg, for only the 2 weeks that we spent a lot of time together, I knew she meant it. I knew she meant it. And she passed away shortly after that. It was 10 years later, 3 weeks before my 15th birthday. I was still struggling with the third step. you know, I just, and my sponsor, she, a lot of you gals know her. She walks in the room and she just oozes spirituality. She does. Anybody know or disagree with me? You can't. You just feel it around her. And I would say, I can't do this. And she said, it'll happen. It'll happen. She said, just don't drink and it'll happen. Well, this was 10 years after Peg died almost. And at 3 o'clock every morning, my fingernails were in the palm of my hand. I just, you know, I could hear God say, just give it all to me. And I would say, I don't know how. And there would be tears. And that one morning, you know, I wish I had documented this date because it's so monumental. 3 o'clock in the morning, there I was, pitch dark. My husband was snoring. It took a little bit of the aura away, you know, this. But this light just opened up out of the dark. And here comes little Pig. This is a pretty hard part of my story to tell because it's my favorite part, but it's emotional. And she just stepped out of this little circle of light. And she said, you know, Evie, said, if you give it all to me, I'll take it to God and say, Dan, I never told her who my patron saint was, and yet there she was knowing it. And I didn't say anything else. I just opened up my arms. It was just like they were just had a will of their own. And this little thing took everything away, and the light goes behind her. And I sat there thinking, God, why couldn't I just give it to you the last 15 years? And here she comes again. She said, damn it, I didn't know people in heaven talk like that. But she said, damn it, I told you to give it all. Give me the guilt, too. I said, okay, there's the guilt. And she left. I never saw her again. And this was like 3:30 by now, and of course I didn't get any sleep the rest of the night. I just tears, and my sponsor gets up about 6:30. You know, I can wake her up, but she's quite a bit older than I am, so you can tell, you know, bless her heart, she's older than dirt, but I called her up. I couldn't wait till 6:30, and I called her up, and I was crying hysterically, but there were tears of joy, and she said, take a deep breath, take a deep breath. And I finally got out. I said, you won't believe my dream. And I told her everything, because I had told her all about Peg, you know, 10 years earlier. And she said, Ellie, that wasn't a dream. She said, Peg had to, she's been waiting for 10 years to perform one miracle so she could cross over. And you exchange as loving friends, you exchange the most beautiful gift that you will give each other ever. She took your third step for you, all of your troubles and all of the guilt, and you gave her the miracle that she took over. Whoa! And there was no doubt when Ruth said it, that it was absolutely true. I knew I hadn't been dreaming. She said, you only knew Peg for 2 weeks. God set that up to perform the miracle for both of you someday. And I didn't do anything but cry for 2 weeks. You know, everybody at 15 years, everybody thought I had it all together. And I go in different directions every day for meetings. Madera, Kalinga, Kingford, Fresno. I was at a meeting depending on what I need to pick up that day. It's just, you know, it's always 70 miles round trip. And I'd go into a meeting just bawling and go out of a meeting bawling. And, I told Ruth, I said, I don't know what people are thinking. She said, it doesn't matter. When you're able to talk again, then you can share the miracle. She said, as a matter of fact, any time you're asked to talk, she said, you share that and tell people they don't have to wait for this to come to them. In other words, if you have lost somebody that you love and you trust, they may just be waiting to take your trouble and cross over, and that miracle will happen for both of you. You know, I lost 200 pounds off my shoulders that night. And I've not gained an ounce of it back. She got awful stingy with my cat because she kept it, and thank God, you know. It was so cute. So it's just like Ted to come back and say, damn it, I told you, all of it, give me the guilt, too. And I doubt that she's using words like that once she's gotten inside. But I think God let her use it one more time just for shock value, you know. Bless her heart. Bless her heart. So, you know, if you meet somebody very briefly and you don't think they've touched your life, you might want to rethink that. My sponsors always told me, always listen in meetings. Always, always, always listen in meetings. Because when you're not learning what to do, you're learning what not to do. Makes sense. So there's one time, because I'm always looking for exceptions, you know, like, oh, it has to be wrong about this. But I walked into the Friends of Fellowship new meeting one day, and there were, I mean, there were fighters and the bandanas and the grease under their fingernails and the tattoos and the leather and the boots and looked like they had fur on. And they were still smoking in meetings, you know. And I thought, surely Ruth didn't mean for me to listen to these people. You know? But I never leave a meeting, so I thought, well, I'll humor him. You know, there was this one guy, and this has been, oh, over 20 years ago, but it made such an impression on me. And I walked out of the room, and I was just overjoyed with what he had to say, but then I was pissed at Ruth for being right again, you know? But it was okay, he had been in Chicago, and I've never been in Chicago. Thank God, because they call it the loop with four roads you can get lost on, you know? If you see it from the air, it looks like a four-leaf clover. Anyway, he was on there, and one afternoon, it was broad daylight, and he was drunk, and he was in a high-speed chase. Of course, he wasn't doing the chasing, he was being chased, and he sideswiped nine cars before they finally stopped him and arrested him. And he said, I was sitting in this jail in Chicago. And he said, I decided then, he said, I made a life-changing decision. He said, no more Pontiacs. I just died. You know, if you haven't listened for what you want to learn tonight, listen for what you shouldn't do, because there's a lot of it that comes out of my mouth. I have one more thing about my sponsor. I've known her for 50 years. But I didn't know she was in the program. She was 15 miles away from me, and so our lives really didn't come together that well until. But I knew that, I always knew that her spirituality was so real. But it was about 8 years ago. She had 10 grandchildren, and one of her granddaughters, beautiful girl, passed away. She had a lengthy illness, and she passed away. And never once during her illness, nor at the time of her funeral or after that, did I see Ruth's faith waver, not one bit. She said she was so blessed to go meet God, and she was saving. And it just blew me away. So if I ever, which I don't think I ever did, but if I ever wondered whether or not she walked it like she talked it, oh my goodness. And now she has another grandchild that's been very seriously ill at community hospital for 2 weeks. And that woman's faith is as steady as a rock. I'm not saying she didn't cry when Stacy died. I'm just saying that she knew in her heart that God knew what was best for Stacy. Never questioned it. She'd have had Karen and me kicking and screaming too, and from the funeral. I have learned from her just by being in her presence. She's just a fantastic woman. So if you're new or fairly new, or if you're old or fairly old, and you don't have a sponsor, I believe you're doing yourself a disservice, because I believe we all have to be accountable to somebody. She's remarkable. And, you know, people say, well, my husband and I, both in the program, we sponsor each other. My butt! Where do you go when you want to complain about your husband? You know? Maybe I would be look at it a little differently if he were a normie, but no, I don't think so. Get a sponsor. Use a sponsor. If you're not real thrilled with the sponsor, don't listen to this part. Get a different sponsor. Yeah. It's okay. I read something in here. The first thing that I was looking at the spiritual appendix. I still don't know where it is so much on that. Oh, the spiritual appendix. I was looking at this one time because it's a suggested footnote where you look. And I was 90 days sober, and I read this, and I don't know why. Just like Jennifer tonight, sometimes we read something 1,000 times, and the next time we read it, and it's something that smacks us. And I'm sure you've all read it. It says, there is a principle, which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. The principle is contempt prior to investigation. And I didn't know what the heck that meant. I called Ruth that morning. I said, what does that mean? She said, don't knock it till you try it. Okay. Miss Nancy Pants with all of her foreign languages couldn't even interpret this. But the simpler the better. She said, you know, don't knock it till you've tried it. And I always wanted to taste Zima. And my auntie, who takes such good care of me, she's so sweet. She went to a wedding reception one time, and they didn't have Zima then. This is about 19 years. Friday, and I talked about Zima because they made it look so good on commercial. She was at a wedding reception one time, and she snuck out of the reception. And my auntie never talks like this. She said, Eddie. I said, yeah. I said, how's the wedding going? And she said, fine. But she said, I want to tell you, I tasted it, and Zima tastes like shit. And she said, I thought, God bless her. You know, there's always these guardian angels that we have, and she doesn't drink. It was just so cute. But she sipped it for me, and she probably liked it, but I know she didn't. And Bill was wondering if I could fill the 40 minutes, and I'm over, and I apologize for that. But I've had a great time, and you know, you people have helped me tonight. And I thank you so much. Like I say, take it up with Diane after the meeting. And God bless you. Keep coming back.